It is what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah, yeah.
You got Olympic fever yet, Bert?
Actually, I've been very much enjoying it. Unfortunately, being in the States, they only focus so much on that, so I have to actually be on my computer and looking up majority of the stuff for the Canadians and all that, but it's been quite exciting.
What have you been
built over there?
What have you been most intrigued by, Bert?
I'm a snowbird. I've been watching the skiing, downhill skiing. Just watching the bobsledding right now. I know there was an American little thing, 17-year-old that won gold in the pipe for the Americans. That was a pretty big story, and just pretty much everything. I enjoy all the sports: skating, figure skating, speed skating. Last night, the New Zealanders are cleaning up, so it's been good.
Yeah, you're talking about Chloe Kim, the American.
Kim, yeah.
So she wanted to compete in the last Olympics, but she was only 13, and they said no. She wasn't allowed because she was too young. So then she comes out here and wins a gold medal, which is and won by a ton. I mean, she what a competitor. It's fun to watch. Do you see how these Olympians, Todd, you know, and you relate it to yourself, you know, someone who competed in the NHL every single night, getting up for just one single event. I mean, how different is that in sort of, you know, that level of compete with athletes?
Well, you know what? I was watching the men's, and they were just in the prelims, and I think it was the top 12 that have to advance on. And sorry, you guys got to correct me. Who's the redhead American that's one of them?
Sean White.
Sean White, yeah.
He was having an interview with them, and he said it was the most nervous he's ever been, was just trying to qualify. Not even get to the big show yet, was just the qualifying part. So it shows how big and important it is to these guys that they get that they got two runs to try to get to the big show. If not, your Olympics is over in two little runs and you're packed up and you're heading home. So, yeah, it's a lot of stress that goes on with all this. You put so much work into it, especially these amateurs. A lot of them have to go out there and get sponsors and have to go work a job while they're trying to train and compete and all that. I have a lot of respect for these guys, for sure.
We had a discussion this morning, Todd, about women's hockey in the Olympics and whether or not it should continue as an Olympic sport, considering that it basically comes down to Canada and the United States, and after that it's pretty sparse as far as countries are concerned that can compete. Would you be okay with a women's hockey being eliminated from the Olympic sport until they at least other teams can kind of catch up to the Americans and the Canadians?
Oh, it's a tough and sensitive subject.
That's why we asked.
I said, yeah, it should go.
You know what? I was having this discussion 2 days ago with Doug Gilmore when we were up in the Bahamas. He was up there also, and we got to hang out for a couple days or whatever. We had the exact same discussion. It's a two-team race every single time to it. The part that I don't like is the build up to it. It's the 10-0s, the 8-0s, and all that kind of stuff. And it's some of those games are tough to watch. I can see some people saying, "Well, there's not even close. I'm not going to watch this." So there's going to be a less attention paid to it. But it's tough. They're all deserving to go. It's part of the Olympics, and they deserve the right. Maybe it's time for other countries to explore bringing in North Americans to come help out more often, and try to find North Americans who have passports to play in other or live in other from other countries and all that. But it's a tough topic to discuss, but it is. It's a two horse race every single year, and everyone just waits till the finals anyway. So,
Todd Bertuzzi with us here on Sportsnet 650. We've got a Twitter poll question at Sportsnet 650 this morning. We're asking, so you've got mixed doubles curling, which is going on. Canada wins gold in that. They've added a team event in figure skating. So I'd like to see 3-on-3 hockey in the Olympics. Love it or shove it.
Mm. 3-on-3. Oh, I love it. I love the excitement of it. I just played in a 3-on-3 tournament a week ago for charity.
In goal?
And there was I was playing out, and there was 20 other teams. And I gotta be honest, there was a handful of ex players that I played with, which I'm not going to name. And we actually lost 8-2-3 against this team that goes out and plays all these 3-on-3 tournaments. They strategically put us to our knees. And it was unbelievable to sit back and watch how they did it. But I think it would be exciting. I think anytime you can add exciting sports to the Olympics to grab more attention and all that, I think it should be, could easily be one also while the hockey's going on. You can have another side one of 3-on-3.
Who'd you, names, two events. Names. Who did you play with?
Can't divulge. Can't divulge because we got big egos. And I'm actually divulging myself, so I'm actually putting myself out there.
You've outed yourself on that one. Okay, fair enough. Todd Bertuzzi with us here on Sportsnet 650. I want to play you a clip from Jacob Markstrom from Friday night.
Perfectly, we're getting to this one when I just called myself out, eh?
Yes, exactly. I feel like it's totally apropos. So here's Jacob Markstrom on Friday after the Carolina game. Have a listen to this.
I mean, it's frustrating. It's I'm not good enough, and you know we got a lot of guys in our team that's not playing good enough either to be in this league. So it's you know, it's embarrassing.
So he went on to say he was taken out of context. I don't think there was anything to be taken out of context based on what he was saying there, listening to the clip over and over again. But he follows it up with a shutout. The team comes up with a 6-0 victory in Dallas 2 days later. But fair or foul, or have you ever experienced anything like that where somebody, a teammate, goes that public?
Well, media people could overanalyze this big time. Me, I listened to it one take and he already threw himself under the bus. So I don't think there's anything wrong with him going out and he threw himself under the bus. He said there's a handful of other players that don't deserve to be playing right now either. And truth behold, they went and answered the bell the next game with the shellacking of Dallas. And it worked out. But no, I don't mind if guys call. If they make reference to that we're not good enough, as long as they put themselves under the bus too. And that's what he said. He said, I'm not good enough. I don't deserve to be playing right now. And there's a handful of others, too. But if there's someone that comes out, for me, it's a goaltender. I've never had a goaltender, really. And if they did, it'd be a long practice the next day, called players out. It's a team sport. We're all accountable. And if anything gets addressed in the room, not over the media.
That's interesting how players always say if it comes from a goaltender, it has to be done in a certain way. When, you know, we see players sometimes say, you know, if we could have got a timely save or whatever it is, and then it's just, you know, not naming anyone, but saying.
No, we never say we could have got a timely save. The coaches say that. Never heard a player say we can get a timely save. We never, ever refer to anything that's going on with our goaltender at all. They're obviously in the sensitive spot. They're the last line of defense.
Right.
And I really never recall a player ever saying that. It's always a coach that says that we could use a timely save here and here. Never really. I've never heard a player ever call a goaltender out. And I think that's why you never see it the other way, because it'd be a long next day in practice. That's what I'm saying.
So when after Jacob Markstrom had said that, they held a players meeting on Saturday to discuss, you know, what had happened and his comments and the whole bit. If even though he threw himself under the bus, there was obviously some feelings that were hurt or whatever it was for them to hold a meeting. Jake Virtanen said afterwards that, you know, we don't hold any hard feelings against him for what he said. So obviously there was something that the players didn't react to or didn't like what he had said.
There's nothing that he didn't say that I didn't like on it. If I'm a player, he pulled himself out first and foremost, and then he said there's a handful of guys that need to get freaking better and shouldn't be playing in the league right now if they're going to be playing like that. What's wrong with that? But me personally, keep it in the dressing room. Yeah. Come in after that game, smash your stick around the dressing room, and then start yipping and yapping and get it all edged out there. There's no reason to get stuff put into the media, especially in a Canadian market. It just gets overblown and it causes too much of a black cloud over your team, especially, you know, when you're in the situation that you're in.
Did you ever, was there ever a moment that stood out where somebody, you know, started smashing a stick and called everybody out within the room?
Oh, yeah. It's happened lots. There's many times where I've come in and lost my cool and started snapping and yipping and yapping. But at the same time, I can only do that, or someone can only do that, if they're freaking performing and they're carrying their weight. That's the only time I believe you can do it. You can't have a guy come in there that's not playing well or not playing much and set an example for everyone else when he's not the one leading. So it's a sensitive way to do it, but you got to make sure that if you're doing it, you're the one that's pulling the weight.
So when did you do that? Was it here during your time as a Canuck, or was that as a wing or as a former Calgary?
No, mine was more with the Canucks. It's like I always thought that we were a better team and that we could have more and do more and all that. So I think in those 2000 years, we were a freaking passionate team. We were a passionate line. We expected and wanted the best from everything. And when we're out there giving it our all and all that, well, you know what? We didn't have too many lows. The only lows came was really in the playoffs. That's when things kind of buckle down. And you look back on it, is there a couple pieces we could have used more, or what else could we have done, or what it is? But for those years, it was very few and in between.
You know, it's funny listening. There was a recent little documentary, if you will, that was done on Sportsnet and on Sportsnet 650 Radio with the voices of the Canucks, with Jim Robson, Jim Hewson, and John Shorthouse. And I found it, there was a real telling moment where I thought Jim Hewson mentioned how you guys, that sort of West Coast Express era, you guys were kind of the best in hockey, in the sense that you guys broke the conventional wisdom where it was, you know, clutch and grab and, you know, sort of trap style hockey at that time. Were you guys all of a sudden kind of pushed the flow of hockey, where you guys were up tempo? There weren't a lot of teams that played that way. Do you think that sort of era in Canucks hockey is maybe underrated because you didn't win, but you guys were still, you know, you guys were a hard team to beat?
We were. It was a hard rink to come in. We were the new start of run-and-gun offense with having a responsible guy on your line playing defense. We would trade chances with everyone. And even in that clutch-and-grab era, we played with a speed and an offensive flair that was tough to contain. And we just came – you know what? I don't know. You can't look back really and discuss it now, but I believe that our line was the one that kind of changed the mold, getting away from the clutch and grab, and other teams started building teams like we were.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. So 2 weeks ago, before the NHL trade deadline, we're discussing Eric Branson and Thomas Vanek's names continue to come up here in Vancouver. There's a lot of others around the league as well. How do you put it? Is there more value on a 26-year-old defenseman with not a whole lot of track record as far as playoffs are concerned, or early in his career, or someone like a Thomas Vanek who has, you know, playoff experience? He's got years in the league. Can you quantify each one as their trade value? And is one going to bring a player, one going to bring a pick, or can you really do that right now, this far out with 2 weeks to go?
You know what, Sebo, it all depends on what you guys, what's the organization looking for. I'm a firm believer in bringing veteran depth. You can't have enough leadership or depth in that dressing room and guys who have been there and done that before. I know that was a huge mold with the Detroit Red Wings. That's how they made their trades and they brought people in. I know at the one time when we went to the Western Final against Anaheim, they brought myself in. They brought in couple other pieces from Chicago, but we were all depth character players who fit into a role, and we ended up going to the Western Finals and losing to Anaheim in Game 7. And the one thing I noticed is that when push comes to shove, you want that experience on your bench, that calm, the poise, not to get too high, especially in huge situation games like a Game 7 and all that. But if you're an organization looking to rebuild or to make changes and all that, or if you're looking just to get over the hump, first round, past the first or second round, then you look at probably getting some youth in, where you know you can't make a run, but you can get past the first round, but you're also bringing in an asset that you're going to keep for the future and all that. The other trading partners looking to bring in some picks and all that so they can keep bolstering their lineup going forward.
Appreciate you hanging out with us. Get back to your Olympic viewing, and we'll bug you again next week, all right?
All right, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Stay away from 3-on-3 hockey, by the way, after your last performance.
I am now.
And, Tom, we're going to talk to Tiger Woods with you next week because he's back at Riviera this week, so be prepared.
Yes. It's gonna be actually, by the way, I was just in the Bahamas, and he's got a place out there where a handful of them are playing. What a special area that is, where they can go practice and get ready.
Nice.
Have fun, buddy. All right, Todd Bertuzzi joining us here this morning on Sportsnet 650, talking all things Canucks.
Sportsnet 650.